Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
Oscar's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
That is filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not, your heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. The neurobiological system is telling it to run, but your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Now do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. 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 Radio! Radio!
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome to the perfect triangle.
Or not. The perfect triangle is on hiatus. Giuseppe has been volunteered for a re-education vacation. He will spend the next few weeks coming to embrace the joys of quack quack vaccination. When Giuseppe returns September 10th, he will be re-educated to be happy. So, happy. Until then, enjoy the guest host residency of the one and only Frederick C. Blackburn, Blackbird 9, and the rare collector's edition of Blackbird 9's Dinner Club.
And happy Friday. It is time for another edition of the special three-part series on the perfect triangle with Mr. Giuseppe, who I hope is getting lots of work done on his project. But tonight we have act two of our three-part dinner theater murder mystery comedy in three parts. 9/11 was fake and gay. And tonight we have a special surprise for you in our special edition Blackbird Nine's Friday Night Dinner Club, Theater Dinner Club. Everybody likes dinner theater, right? This was originally going to be a one-man, three-show performance piece, but we decided to rewrite it for tonight, and tonight we will have a special Act 2 that's been completely rewritten to include the character White Man from South Africa. And White Man from South Africa will be played by Breakfast Club Pathfinder and friend of the show, Mr. Jan Lambrick. And I will, of course, continue my part as Time Lord Byron in Temporal Exile. Of course, I will be playing that part tonight in our dinner theater. So with that said, we're going to try to use Skype magic here, cast the spell, and bring in not doing that right. Cancel this. Back here. And we do this. And we do this. And if it works, we will have the white man from South Africa entering the stage from stage left. Greetings, good sir.
Good evening, Frederick. It's an honor to be on your show.
Oh, thank you for coming on. I'm glad. I know it is late there, so thank you for the extra effort and join me in my filling in for the great Giuseppe as he's taking a break for these 3 weeks. So I'm filling in, and we decided to debut my improvisational new piece of work, three parts. 9/11 was fake and gay, and so I thank you for coming on this evening to talk about the second part of this, which is basically the first part was leading up to 9/11, and then this part is going to be from 9/11 to current year, and then next week will be part three, which will be from here into the future. So what that this will be the triptych of me filling in for the Giuseppe on my perfect triangle. So he said, do artsy stuff. So this is artsy stuff, right? Anyway. So, but, you know, you in South Africa, I think, are just kind of in a timeline ahead of so many, like here in the United States, with this Kalergi plan, Globo Homo agenda. And so I had sent you a list of topics that I want to talk to about, you know, just addressing this timeline fashion of, you know, how did people in this community, this greater truth community of the, you know, some say the Great Awakening, just, you know, the greater truth community, people who still believe in civilization, rule of law, you know, these little things. You know, they call us Nazis and everything else now, but, you know, those people who are still looking for truth, you know, to bring you in and, you know, what you have gone through in the years after 9/11 and how you became aware of all of these topics that I would like to get to in the next 2 hours here on Revolution Radio. So first, I'd just like you to introduce yourself to the audience, people who don't know your work and what you do, and just kind of give the quick introduction there.
Okay. My name is Jan Lamprecht. I live in Johannesburg, South Africa. I was born in what was then called Rhodesia, which is now known as Zimbabwe. It was a British colony run by whites who rebelled against the British Empire, and we fought a war against the blacks. But our war was just one of a number of wars that were raging in Africa that had been started by the Russians, the Chinese, and our Jewish liberal friends, getting the blacks to rebel against the whites. And how I got involved in politics, I came to South Africa after Rhodesia went down. I was totally quiet. I never got involved in politics in any way, shape, or form, but I had learned enough from my youth in Rhodesia. I'd learned that if you don't watch politics carefully, politics will destroy your life. And so I monitored all political activity in South Africa, and I kept up with it. And I could see, as I lived in South Africa, that we are going down the same path as Rhodesia, etc. But the thing that really sent me over the edge was in the year 2000, just a couple of months before 9/11, Robert Mugabe, the communist black who was in charge of Zimbabwe, he seized all the farmland, and they were killing farmers and driving them off the land. And that event is what sent me over the edge and got me into what you could call the truth business.
Right. And so to me, you have such a hell level view of this. We're seeing the same thing happening here in the States. You know, people in the UK are seeing it happening there. In all of these white countries, we're seeing the same thing where, you know, for one reason or another, you know, white people are being dispossessed of their lands and are being attacked and demonized at the same time. This is the thing that, you know, in this model, this communist Marxist model, these people think that, you know, the white people have been labeled as the oppressors in this Cartman drama triangle. And somehow the Jews and the media have become the rescuers. You know, that, you know, we're here to save you and to fix the world. And first thing you have to do is destroy those white people and all this Western civilization. And, but, you know, we're your allies. And, you know, so we just see that model playing out everywhere. And I think once you start seeing it, you just can't unsee it. And then you start looking at your timeline, your history models, and you start seeing it all through there. And this is one of the things I might admire so much of your work, and also people like Mr. Mike King over at Tomato Bubble. And, you know, just your detail of history and going back through, you know, these timelines and having to unlearn the things that were, you know, this was physically impossible. These were lies. And so we take that out of the equation, and what are you left with? And so I just really admire that about your research. You know, at the Trading Post, we always talk about having thinkers, stinkers, and sinkers, which is basically information, misinformation, and disinformation. And when, you know, I post your work, you know, I never find any errors in it. I can see that people would get upset with what you're saying because it goes against a certain tribe's sensibilities that they find, was it grossly offensive? I like that legal term now. So anyway, so what we want to do is just kind of talk about the 10 questions or topics that I sent Mr. Lambrecht about, you know, breaking down this time between 9/11 and now, and compare what he's seeing on the other side of the world from me to what I was seeing at those same times as he became aware of it and I became aware of it. And we started working together to say, are you seeing what I'm seeing with this? And so the first one, of course, is, you know, 9/11 truth. When did you start questioning the official narrative of 9/11? Or when did you decide that 9/11 was fake and gay? And then the war on terror, Israel's role, then the Iraq war, you know, and what that was, and then Mockingbird media. You know, why is all of this international media all saying the same thing that we can prove isn't true, but when we try, they slap us down? Then five, greater Israel agenda and the Odin-Yenin plan. Six is the role of Israeli Mossad, the Unit 8200, Unit 269, Talpiot, Mega, etc. Then seven, from 9/11 to Pizzagate, where we enter into the world of Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, you know, Ehud Barak, you know, all of these, you know, Harvey Weinstein, you know, characters, you know, when that came on everyone's radar. Then the rise of social media, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Google, YouTube, you know, you got, I think, knocked off of Amazon too, and you had your PayPal locked up you know, those kind of things. And then, of course, the third rail, which we'll complete with, you know, complete with jazz hands when we do our big finale, is, of course, the Holocaust and, you know, questioning the narrative of the Holocaust and the reality that people like Graham Hart, Mr. Graham Hart, who's another Breakfast Club Pathfinder, is currently in jail. You know, Alfred Schaefer is currently in jail. Ursula Haverbeck is currently in jail. You know, all of these, you know, these are political prisoners that are in jail right now because of their commitment to this movement of truth that was vastly spurred on by 9/11. So just from the top, you know, 9/11 truth, when did that term enter your reality down in South Africa?
All right. Yeah, you know, the things that were closer to home, I was onto, but the things in your part of the world took me a longer time to figure out. So for me, for example, the 9/11, I actually never questioned the narrative. I never questioned the narrative. The only thing that happened was initially I started my website, my original website, and became public about 2.5 weeks or so before 9/11. So just as I was getting my website up and running, suddenly this weird thing happens that suddenly sends the whole world, you know, turns everything upside down. And at the time, the only thing about 9/11 that I found suspicious was that apparently, I think it was Putin claimed to have warned America that this was coming. So I focused on that strange aspect. But at the time, you must remember, at the time, I was totally pro-Jew, pro-Israel. I had Jewish friends. I had never yet thought of Jews as being liars, as being people capable of deception. It had never entered my mind, never entered my mind. And so when 9/11 happened, I bought into the narrative hook, line, and sinker, as strange as it was. And in the ensuing years after that, I began to get people on my website, mainly from America, who started raising the issue of Jews. And I found myself actually censoring them eventually, because I kept saying to them, I'm busy talking about the truth and communism and reality. And, you know, these things that you're raising, this is not reality. Most of what the people were raising was Christianity, Christian criticisms of Jews. Nobody was coming to me and telling me that 9/11 was fake. And how I actually discovered it was in 2015 when I got onto Twitter. In 2015, I decided to start playing around a bit with Twitter. And as I was playing around with Twitter, I came across this bloke called Alex Linder. And I was talking to Alex Linder, and Alex Linder was onto the Jews. Now, I started waking up to the Jews in 2011, 2012. 2012 was the big turning point for me. That's when I realized the Holocaust was a hoax. And that started me down the rabbit hole. So I was well convinced that the Holocaust was fake, and I began to discover more and more Jewish lies. But 9/11 still evaded me. And the way that I actually learned about it was one day on Twitter when Alex Linder tweeted and he spoke about the buildings being blown up. And I said to him, are you serious? Were those buildings blown up? And he said, yeah, go and look at this and this and this. I'm not sure if he referred me to Berlin, but he referred me to something, and the concept totally blew my mind. And I thought, this cannot be. And I went and I looked at it, and good God, I began to realize, you know, there was something wrong there. That engineering wasn't, you know, those buildings can't collapse into dust like that. You know, you're talking tens of thousands of tons of steel and concrete. It just can't implode like that. And it was Alex Linder who got me onto that. And that was yet another big moment for me. And but it took a long time. If it wasn't for somebody with his credibility, I wouldn't have even considered it. And that was the first time I heard it out of anybody's mouth, believe it or not.
That's fascinating, because for me, it was the complete opposite, where I was on 9/11 on 9/11. But the final red pill was, you know, to have to acknowledge that the Holocaust narrative was completely bogus. And I was so ingrained with that, because, like, you know, for anybody who knows, I'm the son of an, you know, U.S. World War II veteran. My father, you know, was professional military. He, before he went into education, he did his military service, lied about his age, went, fought in World War II. You know, and stayed in the military and ended up retiring from the Air Force. And so he was, you know, just, you know, the good guys, right? And, you know, World War II, my scoutmaster was, of course, World War II. All my scoutmasters were World War II veterans, you know, so it's just like we fought the good fight. You know, that was the great generation, et cetera. And then you realize that, you know, no, we got played. And yeah, I just physically, you know, for me, you know, we'll talk, you know, more about that in the last segment, but it was getting on YouTube and the Denier Bud videos, and just having to really break down, you know, all of that Holocaust narrative and look at the numbers, look at the facts, after, you know, knowing that, you know, 9/11 was completely fabricated, the anthrax was completely fabricated. You know, this is just one, you know, mockingbird illusion after another. And, you know, so how do we fight this? And so one of the things that on 9/11, when people say, you know, what got you started, you know, question the official narrative, was, you know, World Trade Center 7, the way it fell, you know, to me was, you know, that was obviously a controlled demolition. You know, you even have Larry Silverstein saying, you know, we decided to pull it, Lucky Larry, right? The physically impossible. Then the magic cell phone calls, you know, that, okay, you know, I am teaching this technology to the best and the brightest in the country, and all this, you know, industry sphere, and this, you know, military sphere, and the intelligence community, you know, this is the bleeding edge as we move from what we call second generation telephony, where computer networks were over there, telephone networks were over there, cell phone networks were over there, and they just never played with each other, into this converged network, right? And so I was there teaching this, and all my students, you know, were completely going along what they knew was physically impossible. You know, that was what was so insane. They were so committed either to the lie or to the fear of, they said anything, they would lose their position, lose their jobs. But, you know, I was there trying to explain why the 9/11, you know, I thought we were going after the bad guys, right? So I'm trying to explain why that part of the narrative is fabrication, disinformation, because it's physically impossible. And they're just looking at me like, you know, we're going to take you out and string you up. Yeah, that was the kind of attitude. And of course, then the magic passports, you know, but no black boxes from the planes. You know, it's like, okay, this is obviously planet evidence. You know, this is like a movie set. This is like a bad play. You know, so you're dealing with Marxist political theater in that real politics sense, that they're trying to create a narrative synthetically. And it's like, you know, you start down the rabbit hole of how far does this go? And, you know, from right at the beginning, I don't know if you've gone back to see it, but, you know, the buildings hadn't even collapsed yet, and you've got Ehud Barak in England, right? He's not in the U.S. He came to the U.S. to start a business because he had retired from politics, right? So he left Israel, came to the United States, just happened to go into all these businesses that dealt with munitions and things like that, you know, sophisticated military explosive stuff. And has his role of Unit 269, one of those, you know, elite groups in Israel. You know, very curious that on 9/11, he's not in the U.S. He's in London, probably with a ticket to Israel in his pocket, while he's giving this speech about, obviously, this is the work of Osama bin Laden and, you know, Al-Qaeda. And then you've got in the United States, Jerome Hauer saying the exact same thing on all the Mockingbird American stations. And then you got an Israeli TV, Ariel Sharon and Bibi Netanyahu saying the same thing, that this is obviously Osama bin Laden. This is Al-Qaeda. You know, this is why you have to go into Afghanistan and start the war on terror. And, you know, so that was the insanity of how this was unfolding right at 9/11. So had you seen those clips of them talking about the great Israel-U.S. alliance in the war on terror?
Yes. You see, once I woke up to it in 2015, I immediately started watching anything and everything I could lay my hands on. So I saw all the stuff with Larry Silverstein, and I looked at all the different videos about him and all his storylines about Lucky Larry, how suddenly just on that day he just happens to head off to the dermatologist, and he and his I think it was his son or something, and they just happened to not be there at the time that they are always there. Once I awoke to 9/11, I downloaded video after video after video, short videos, long videos. I watched them all. And I saw all those things that you talk about, like Ehud Barak in London and so forth. People on the sidewalks. I think people on the sidewalks in New York already just when somebody apparently comes up to them, you know, to, you know, some journalist is around, some guy on the sidewalk is already busy telling you, oh, this is the Muslim terrorists doing this and so forth. And, you know,
the Harvey Davidson guy, he was classic, you know, explaining exactly how the buildings fell, mostly due to structural failure, you know, and they played that clip repeatedly. But go ahead, go on.
Yeah, you know, and I looked at those things, and then I'm like, good God, you know, people are everywhere. This whole thing is totally planned. I looked at it from every freaking angle because I didn't just want to believe stuff, you know. It's like the Holocaust. When I awoken to these things, you see, for me, what helped me with the truth was growing up in Rhodesia, the events of Rhodesia, and then later coming to South Africa and starting to see the media and other people talking about things and talking junk about things. So at an early age, I was aware that the media can lie. But I thought in my innocence that it was, you know, only us that have been lied about. Never could I have imagined that when you get out into the world, you will later discover that they lie about almost everything. You know, I could never have conceived that there were lies about World War II. I could never have conceived that there were gigantic lies like the Holocaust. 9/11 absolutely came out of nowhere. I mean, even in your own history in America, you know, to discover that there are all kinds of lies about your history and you know, everyone I've spoken to, you just discover the lies and lies. My original stuff was communism. Communism was what I focused on. And I thought that all lies were related to communism. But I didn't realize that Jews created communism. Jews brought communism into existence, and that's where, and that It's not the Russians so much that you're looking at who are the liars. It's everything related to Jews. That at the end of the day, all paths lead back to the Jews. And, you know, with regard to your awakening and my awakening, as you say, we are totally, totally opposites in with regard to 9/11 and the Holocaust. In fact, I'm jumping the gun a bit, but the Holocaust, the first hints I heard from somebody I trusted that the Holocaust was a lie was from a German friend of mine in about 1992. But at the time, I thought to myself, he's just a German protecting Germans. It can't possibly be so. And then it takes me almost 20 years to realize, good God, what he was saying is true. But with regard to 9/11, your particular speciality of knowing how telephony works, and possibly, I don't know, your other closeness to the events, you know, because you know so much more detail, you could see through it immediately. Whereas I can see through things immediately here at my end that relate to me. But isn't it interesting, and I've found this with many people, everywhere I've gone, I've always asked people, how did you get to the truth? And one thing that I've found, like in our case, is that it doesn't matter what it is that wakes you up. Once you realize you've been lied to on a grand scale, you start down a rabbit hole. And it doesn't matter what it is that wakes you up. Eventually, you end up looking at all the same topics. And that is why when things like COVID and stuff came up and the election fraud in America, I said to myself, this is going to work. This is going to work for us. Because once people realize that you can be lied to on a grand scale, then suddenly that bubble bursts and you realize that you could have been lied to about other things. So I am so delighted when I look at people who've been looking at the truth of the rigged election last year in your country. I see people coming out by the bus load, by the shipload regarding COVID, and I know, oh man, this is going to work for us. Eventually, once they go down that rabbit hole, eventually we'll all end up in the same place. And isn't it amazing that we can all end up in the same place and you discover that all these lies all tie back to the Jews?
Exactly. Funny how that works. When you go looking for the truth, all roads lead there. But you were talking about just the lies of the, you know, investigations and the big lies. And, you know, to me, the awakening there was seeing something so obvious and having our best of the best, the FBI, you know, the G-men, right? This was America's secret police with the best labs in the world, et cetera. And I always tell people, if you really want to understand 9/11, do a deep dive on three FBI agents that were around the period of 9/11. The first is Robert Hansen, because you had mentioned that Putin had warned the West that 9/11 was going to happen. This is kind of backed up in, I don't know if you ever read Sibel Edmonds' book, Classified Woman or whatever. But yeah, you know, she alludes to that because that was part of the intelligence she was getting about, you know, buildings and bridges. And then we find that, you know, one of the pieces of evidence that was, you know, memory hold immediately was the Israeli Mossad caught on the George Washington Bridge in a van of explosives. You know, that was their target. And you never saw that clip again. You know, of course, on the internet, nothing disappears. But, you know, that idea that Putin had warned the U.S. and one of the FBI agents that they took out immediately. As soon as George Bush got the election in 2000, because of the hanging chads in Florida. If you remember that election against St. Al Gore of the Synagogue of Man-Made Global Warming, that big election that put George Bush and the so-called neocons in the White House, the first victory arrest they did was to arrest an FBI agent named Robert Hansen, who happened to be a very devout Roman Catholic and Opus Dei member, who was charged with, you know, conspiring with the Russians. And what's interesting, when you start digging into this, they're very vague about exactly what he did wrong. But what's fascinating about him is they immediately did a set of TV movies and Hollywood movies just demonizing this guy. That he was the worst thing ever, and, you know, he was far worse than, you know, somebody like, you know, Jonathan Pollard, right? You know, the Rosenbergs. Yeah, so this guy's horrible. And so they demonize him and put him in a hole. I mean, he's not allowed to communicate with anybody, and it's kind of, you know, what he was charged with was against, you know, you can't find out because it's classified type of thing. So have you ever heard of him?
I've never heard of him. No, never heard of him.
Okay. Definitely, yeah, research him, because I really think someday there's a story there, because they just put him in a hole immediately and charged him with working with the Russians. And I think he was sending back reports about what was really going to happen, and that was the wrong answer. He was actually trying to do his job. Yeah, that's what I think happened. That's my speculation. But, the second is John O'Neill. Have you ever heard of him?
No, I'm writing it down, John O'Neill.
Well, he's interesting because he was the specialist on Middle East politics after the power vacuum when the Soviet Union pulled out of Afghanistan before the Soviet Union fell. You know, he was the expert on all those dynamics and what Al-Qaeda really was and what, you know, ISIS really was, et cetera. And he was the FBI agent who investigated the U.S. coal, right? And he was thwarted every time, saying, this looks like a false flag operation. I don't think that Al-Qaeda did it. And there were several Jews over him that basically made his life miserable and made him change his findings, basically, or capitulate to the majority. And this led to him leaving the FBI, even though he was a highly decorated guy, and taking a job at the World Trade Center towers, working for Kroll and Associates and Larry Silverstein and all those Jews. And his first day of work was 9/11, and he died in the towers exploding.
Wow.
All right. Whoa. So is that not, you know, fake and gay, kill your guys who can expose you? You know, they were doing wet work on 9/11, before 9/11, on 9/11, and after 9/11. A lot of wet work, you know, going on. And the third is Dale Watson. Dale Watson is the guy who did the non-investigation of Oklahoma City. That's how he got his start, with that non-investigation, physically impossible. Then he went on to do 9/11 and the anthrax non-investigations. And so he was the guy who, you know, didn't see anything wrong with, you know, all that rubble there that's still molten iron, right? You know, Mr. On the Spot. And yes. You know, he took a very lucrative job at Booz Allen Hamilton, which was where Edward Snowden came out of. And, you know, if you remember the Pentagon guy, Rabbi Dov Zakin, that lost $2.3 trillion, right? You know, he is Booz Allen Hamilton. So, you know, those three guys, Robert Hansen, John O'Neill, and Dale Watson, if you get your head around what those three guys were doing around 9/11, it brings it to a whole nother level of play. So, you know, because, you know, the FBI, you know, the anthrax. So when did you hear about the anthrax? What, you know, that was the big thing here. Everybody was putting plastic on their windows, et cetera. You know, when did you hear about the anthrax?
Yeah. Because the anthrax wasn't long after 9/11, and it made the headlines here as well. And so there was the big anthrax panic about all these letters being sent with the anthrax in them. And again, I just assumed that, yes, this is real. And it's only later when I started questioning when I learned about the truth about 9/11, that I actually then began to realize, I think that there were Jews who were actually responsible for creating the anthrax letters and sending them. The other thing that was also very prominent at the time of 9/11 was all the Jews everywhere, including the Jews here in South Africa, they were just spreading anti-Muslim stuff like crazy. They were just pumping whites full of anti-Islam, anti-Muslim, anti-Arab propaganda left, right, and center all over the internet. They were going crazy. They were just and that carried on for quite a few years, actually, in the early years of this fake war on terror. So they were making the most of it. They were milking it for everything they could to turn whites against the Arabs.
And to me, that is right out of the protocols, that they had this unified mockingbird thing to push forward their agenda. And so that's one of the telling signs to me is, you know, the Jews around the world were lockstep in, you know, 9/11 official story. And, you know, I keep asking for where is that, you know, Jews for 9/11 truth group, you know, I want this group, you know, and so with the anthrax, you know, to me, the biggest fake and gay story of this all was the anthrax letters were part of the psychological warfare that the game planners like Robert J. Allman and all his, you know, Hebrew University crowd, you know, he went to MIT, but I think, you know, Americans paid for his money there. I didn't get to go to MIT, but he went to MIT, then immediately went to Israel and started working on war game theory. You know, his whole thing is, you know, rationalizing war and how to do effective wars, etc. You know, and he was one of the main game theorists behind this. So, you know, his group basically projected, you know, how you're going to have to sell this war on terror to the Americans. And so the, you know, anthrax scare was, you know, just the psyop. And, you know, that these letters went out that were, you know, supposed to be from Muslims, you know, about, you know, death to America and death to Israel. You know, all the other countries that, you know, could have been on the letter, you know, why did they specify Israel, right? So death to America, death to Israel, Allah's great, you know, and they all came from the same locations. And believe it or not, Mr. Ryan Dawson, give credit where credit's due, I guess, did a timeline of the who received the letters, where each one was mailed from, yeah, you know, how it was received. There was a animation short, one of the hardest things to find on the internet, especially in YouTube. YouTube, you're not going to find it, but like BitChute or something, you might be able to still find a copy. But basically, it's just a timeline of the letters of when the anthrax was, you know, announced, etc. And they basically jumped the gun on it. And you find out later that the anthrax had a fingerprint that led back not to some cave in Afghanistan, but rather Fort Detrick, Maryland. And as soon as that got exposed, that this came from this facility, Dr. Barbara Rosenberg, echo, 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 immediately started accusing Stephen Hatfield of being the person who did it. And it's like, this makes no sense. You know, why would this American guy send out, you know, what looks like Arab propaganda? And they made his life miserable for years. Then they went after Bruce Ivins, and they completely destroyed that man. If they didn't kill him outright, his official, you know, after they decided he was guilty, he died from a Tylenol overdose, you know, acetaminophen. And, you know, so the question was always, was he killed a la Mossad? As, you know, dead men tell no tales, we'll just put it on him. But again, it made no sense why they were investigating these two men, but refusing to question Dr. Philip K. Zack, echo, 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 who was caught on security camera removing stuff from the same security areas that this anthrax came from. It's like that's kind of evidence there. You know, that's what we call the smoking gun of the anthrax thing. And the FBI refused to act on it because of this Dale Watson character, right? And, you know, so he was fired from his job later because he had this racist group that terrorized Muslims called the Camel Club. So he finally went too far and they fired him. Wow. But, you know, that is the anthrax faking gay story. So had you ever heard any of that?
No, that is all news to me. All I do know is that later I heard that the anthrax was itself fake, but I never dug into the details further. You know, once I grasped that 9/11 was junk, then the rest of it made more sense, but I just didn't dig into the deeper aspects of it. But very interesting. You know the really shocking thing about these Jews is that they get so deep into your society and they become trusted. And they, as I was actually saying to some other whites recently, I wrote an email to some Americans and I said to them, you mustn't feel bad about your struggles to get the truth out, because your problem that you face is that your enemy is more deeply embedded in your country than you are almost. Your enemy is even seen as a more reliable and trustworthy citizen than you are. And so your enemy can actually use, let's call it, the American system and the law and the culture against you, even though he's the one, he's actually the enemy of America and the enemy of you. You know, it's astounding how deeply embedded they become, and then that just like that, they turn on you, and they have all their fingers on the right buttons. And that, you know, that is the really freaky part about 9/11, you know, how every aspect of it is taken care of. Like a thing of 9/11 that blew me away was even how they got rid of the evidence. You know, thousands of tons of evidence just happens to be shipped off to China or something. You know, it's every aspect is taken care of. Oh, man, this is so freaky.
And, you know, the other aspects of, if you did get something to court, guess what? All of those judges and DAs and attorney generals of the states had been put there strategically to block anything from moving forward 9/11 truth cases. I mean, it was amazing when you would see who's blocking you. It's like playing a computer game where here's the next level boss, and it's one Jew after another along your path, because they anticipated, you know, X number of people will file lawsuits in this area, and so we're going to have a block there. You know, so you could just see them mapping this out, you know, to every detail, every nuance. And it's like when we would go to the journalists, you know, I would think, you know, at one time I was considered an expert witness on this kind of technology, right? And suddenly I try to contact my local papers up through the New York Times to CNN, you know, trying to explain, you know, that, you know, we need to be looking for who really did this, not who we're told did this. This official story is physically impossible. And you realize that, oh my God, again, Jew after Jew after Jew is blocking you throughout the whole spectrum of the old media, you know, radio, television, you know, magazines, newspapers, you know, we got blocked at every turn trying to get this information out. You know, so what happened there when you started, you know, trying to get stuff out with your website? Did you, you know, what point did they really start pushing back on you with their, you know, shutting payment channels down, stuff like that?
Yeah, well, I like your term mockingbird media. I think it's brilliant. In my case, in South Africa, I already understood from the 1980s already, I realized that the media, the mass media, cannot be trusted. And we used to even watch your media, like the Jewish New York Times, which we didn't know was Jewish, but we used to watch what your mass media is saying about us. And we could never quite understand, how is it that in America that they don't tell the truth about us here in Africa, the way things are. But I also knew that communism had fingers into the mass media. What I didn't realize was the Jewish liberal angle, that you can't trust that. But I knew enough that I knew the mass media is something you can't trust. So when I started with my website, I did my website because I knew the media can't be trusted, at least on these particular topics. But as time has gone by, I've now realized that I now look at the mass media as nothing more than, let's call it, the corporate propaganda. It's there for the wealthy, and it puts out the propaganda to help the rich become more rich. And it's totally anti-white, it's totally anti-Western, and it has its own agenda. And, you know, once I started my website, even though I didn't really have a following, and I, you know, social media, etc., wasn't really something that existed at that time. And I personally, even when social media came, I left it for many years before I got onto it. I only got onto the social media in 2015 with Twitter. But I found that very early on, there were some journalists who made contact with me. And I thought, well, you know, let's try. I don't trust these people, but let's try. And I tried on various topics to talk to journalists. I came across the rare instance, like once or twice, I came across a journalist who actually was trying to put out some kind of truth, once or twice. That's about as far as it goes. After that, I noticed all the other journalists, or let's just call it corporate media whores. And they don't care about anything except what they are told to put out. I saw that with some stuff that I uncovered about Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe. He had written a book. It was called The Third Chimurenga. And the book he'd written was a book to propagandize the blacks and to make them racially hate the whites and prepare for a race war with whites. So I found out through my contacts that a journalist in South Africa had a copy of parts of this book, and I asked him if I could get photocopies of it, and he allowed me to get photocopies, and he was actually a representative for the BBC. And I asked him, you know, why don't you guys, you know, there's some juicy stuff in here. Why don't you guys publish this? And he said, nah, it's of not great importance to them. And, you know, these people have got, the journalists have got access to lots of information, but they only tell what they're supposed to tell. They are nothing more than corporate propaganda whores. I have no respect for journalists. And as time has gone by and other events have happened, I have zero respect for journalists. And I must tell you, it is so awesome that we have a truth movement where whites are just going out into the world and everybody is becoming a journalist. You've become a journalist. I've become a journalist. And people, whites all over the world have become journalists now. Why? Because journalists cannot be trusted to tell the fucking truth. And, you know, that's pretty much where we are. And, you know, once I started doing things, the more support I got, and the more I started spreading my message around, then it was just a case of they come at you with anything. And, you know, they take away your PayPal account. The first thing I tried early on was when Google brought out Google AdSense. So Google creates an advertising system that all website owners in the world can use. So a guy here that I worked with, he said to me, oh, I set up a website and was dealing with World Cup soccer, and I made so much money out of adverts. Why don't you put some Google adverts on your website? And I thought, oh, okay, would they do it? And I put it on, and for a little while, there was a little bit of money coming in. And then I started noticing the rules keep changing. And so all of a sudden, the rules change, and you find that the little bit of money you were getting is becoming less and less and less and less. And after 5 years or so, you're getting almost nothing, you know. And that's the other thing, is the enemy that whites are facing is very sophisticated. The enemy is very sophisticated, and the enemy knows to watch us. And I personally am quite convinced that the heart and soul of this issue goes back to the expulsions of Jews from Europe. That Jews don't forget that they've been expelled more than 100 times. In fact, exactly. It could be a thousand times. They don't forget that, and they know up front they are going to have a conflict with whites. They know it, man.
Okay.
Even though they don't tell us about it. And
hold on.
So, yeah.
But hold that thought. We're getting ready to go into a break. You're listening to The Perfect Triangle on Revolution Radio. I'm your guest host, Frederick C. Blackburn, on our guests this evening on our act two of our dinner theater play is Mr. Jan Lambrecht, who is playing the white man from South Africa. And we're going to have a break here for a second, and then we'll be back for part two of tonight's performance. So you see you on the other side.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch The Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
And we're back. Okay. You are listening to The Perfect Triangle with Mr. Giuseppe. My name is Frederick Blackburn. I'm filling in while Mr. Giuseppe is away. We've got an echo problem on the line. Hopefully that'll clear up here in a second. But anyway, tonight we are in Act 2 of the three-part series of our Blackbird Nine's Friday Night Dinner Theater Club production, world debut of 9/11 Was Fake and Gay, a dinner theater murder mystery comedy in three parts. Act 2. Motive established, chicken swinger means and opportunities. So we're welcomed to have back with us the man, the white man from South Africa, Mr. Jan Lambrecht. So welcome back, good sir.
I'm glad to still be here for the second hour.
All right. So we had to do major rewrites on the script to work this in, but I think it's going to really work out well in the final cut, right? So we were talking before the break about just how fake and gay the media was in response to 9/11, not only in the United States, but the worldwide media. And one of the most, I think, corrupted things that media does in their manipulation of the public view is to lie by omission. And, you know, if when you're deliberately leaving out truth, you result in, garbage out. You know, you can't form a rational, logical conclusion if people are, withholding data from you. And so when we were talking about, you know, the media and their response, one of the things we see is the series of events that 9/11 happened. The Jewish media immediately points the finger at Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, and everybody remembers Al-Qaeda because they were in the news earlier blowing up U.S. military bases dressed as Arabs and attacking the USS Cole, right? So that's the new boogeyman in the Middle East, you know, Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. That's what everybody says. Well, as soon as 9/11 happened, the real Osama bin Laden granted an interview where he basically flat out said, I did not have anything to do with 9/11. And the Taliban government said to the United States, we will gladly hand you over Osama bin Laden if you can give us proof that he had anything to do with it. Of course, that was asking too much, right? And so you see this interview completely disappeared by the Mockingbird media. It did not exist. You know, the Global Research, you can find it archived there. But basically he's saying, I didn't do it, and you should look within the United States for basically Jewish Israeli firsters that are working towards a different agenda than what the American system is supposed to be. You know, this is basically what he's saying. And then Fox News, bless their hearts for trying, Brett Hume and his name escapes me, but Brett Hume did a piece, and it was on Israeli spying. It was a 4-part series that Fox News did, basically saying, you know, Israel has a modus operandi of spying on America. This is how they do it. And there were over 200 Israelis arrested right before, on, and right after 9/11. They all got sent back to Israel on immigration violations, thanks to Michael Chertoff, Echo, Echo, Echo. And so that was one of the most fake and gay part, is that, you know, this series that exposed the Israeli involvement in 9/11 is completely disappeared. They don't air it, and they erase it from their website. But of course, with the internet, nothing disappears. But yeah, that should have been the headlines on every, you know, newspaper ever, that, you know, all these Israelis caught with explosives and vans, etc., you know, that are connected with the Israeli Mossad, and especially Unit 269, and that's Ehud Barak's group. And then, you know, suddenly we've got to go into Afghanistan. And the other thing is, in they announced that the real Osama bin Laden died, right? Because he had really bad kidney problems and was on dialysis. And so this boogeyman, you know, dies too early in the story. And so suddenly we get introduced to Rita Katz, Echo, 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 and her Sight Memory Organization, where suddenly she becomes the authority for every Mockingbird outlet in the world, and is constantly finding outside the deli there in New Jersey or whatever videotapes of the real Osama bin Laden this time, you know, making threats. And she's the one that, you know, released all these terror videos of these, you know, angry radical Muslims that turned out to be Jewish American kids LARPing as radical Muslims. But they're airing this as it's real. And then when it gets exposed, they never come clean on it. So do you remember, you know, any of that with all the fake Osama bin Ladens, and the Osama bin Laden never took credit, and the FBI has no charges against Osama bin Laden? You remember any of that?
This I wasn't aware of. Everything that you've said there is new to me. That's totally new to me.
You know, so that was like this incredible, surreal, you know, events that, you know, we thought the media was, you know, our fourth estate, keeping our government and military and businesses in line and being held accountable to truth, justice, and the American way, right? And it's turned into this complete propaganda, weaponized propaganda system. And then, you know, moving on, you know, the Iraq War, when did the Iraq War break into your radar?
Well, the Iraq War is interesting for me because at the time I had a request to go to Holland to take part in a conference there. And I was actually in Holland for a couple of days exactly as the U.S. Army was busy invading Iraq. And again, I was totally believing everything. So I was like, yes, those Americans, they're going to do the right thing. They're going to crush these Arab scum, etc. And while I was at this conference in Holland, and it was actually also my first time out of Africa, very first time out of the continent of Africa, and I'm in Holland, and I've heard all these stories that these Dutch are so liberal, and I thought, man, these Dutch people, they must be really stupid, and so forth. And while I was at this conference, there was a guy who came on, and he said that he just wants to talk a bit about the current events that are happening, because the conference had nothing to do with politics. And this Dutch guy gets on the stage, and this Dutch guy starts talking about this invasion of Iraq. And he starts in his liberal way to start questioning it. And as I was listening to this guy, I thought to myself, you know, this guy might be a liberal, but he's not stupid. And he raised a whole bunch of different issues. And that was one of a number of things about the Dutch that I saw in my short little trip there that said to me, yeah, these white people, they're okay. The only reason that they're liberal is there are just some things they don't know. You know, returning to your lying by omission concept, you know, the only reason these whites are liberal is because there are certain facts they don't know about race, etc. But other than that, if they have got some kind of facts, they think carefully and they aren't stupid at all. They think very carefully. So for me, that was a positive thing that I walked away with. But me, I was still buying totally into all the propaganda from America. Oh, no, we've got to go and invade Iraq, etc. And the other thing I remember from the time, the invasion of Afghanistan. And now with your surrender to Afghanistan the other day, I was raising the issue with people about how at the time that these wars started, that especially the Afghanistan issue, there were quite a number of people who said, can America win the war in Afghanistan? And there were those who pointed out, going back to the British and the Russians and so forth, that, you know, these Afghans will really fight you. And it's a strange country to fight in, but these people, they stand their ground. And as the years went by, I thought, no, the Americans, they've really crushed everybody, killed everybody. But look at how this whole thing has ended as a disaster for America. And I'm quite shocked and surprised that, yeah, those people who originally said, you know, America might even lose in Afghanistan, they might be right. I know that it's not a valid criticism of the military people. And I know that the military are very efficient and they got a lot done with very little resources in typical European white fashion. but the weakness, the military weakness for whites is always political. It's always political and economic. But anyway, just a few comments there.
Right. And so the next part of the fake and gay thing is, you know, how they sold the war on Iraq, you know, and you flash back to the original war on Iraq with the babies in incubators story, right? That was the first Gulf War, and that was the Bush senior, you know, operation. And that, you know, caused massive death of, you know, what, a quarter of a million Iraqi children. And Madeleine Albright's out there saying it was worth it, right, you know, to do this completely bogus war. And then, you know, fast forward to Bush Jr., and suddenly they're meeting with the British government and saying, we're going to cook the intelligence to go into Iraq because we've got this super special Office of Special Plans, Paul Wolfowitz, Douglas Feith, PNAC, you know, Richard Pearl, you know, design of taking out seven countries in 5 years. And this was revealed by General Wesley Clark on, you know, Democracy Now! Of all, you know, NPR shows with echo, echo, echo. But yeah, they said, yeah, we're going to take out Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. And this was like right after 9/11 when, you know, he's at the Pentagon and they're telling him that, you know, this is the plan, seven countries in 5 years, starting with, you know, the new Pearl Harbor of 9/11. And, you know, that they said, you know, all the stuff about the, you know, Saddam has all these mobile anthrax labs. Saddam was seeking yellow cake uranium from Niger, Africa. And you just saw this little circle of bad data being fed to journalists who then put a story that is then used by a politician to make policy, and that they're all working along this chain of, you know, bogus data from somebody like Rita Katz, and then it gets put in the New York Times, and then that's read on the floors of Congress, and next thing you know, we're invading another country. You know, and it was all about cooking the intelligence for this war, and it finally got exposed, and, you know, that was known as the Downing Street Memo, you know. And so we saw how, you know, the media actively worked to make this war on terror happen. And so, you know, why would we do this, right? And you look at it, and you find out there's no strategic U.S. reason for doing this. And early on, they tried to say, oh, it was about Halliburton and people, evil white guys like Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, who just want to make money. And it's like, no, there's a bigger agenda here than just greed. You know, there are too many people going along with this. And then you find out about the greater Israel agenda as dreamed by Theodore Herzl in the 1800s. And, you know, the whole World Zionist Congress and the birth of Israel, and that Israel needs to go from the Nile to the Euphrates. And these modern Maccabees are trying to pull this off at the expense of the Americans and the British and the rest of the world. So when did you start learning about Greater Israel and the Odin-Yenin plan?
The Greater Israel thing, let me just quickly make a comment about the Iraqi invasion. The thing that I remember the most about the Iraqi invasion that was hitting the media as we were seeing it was they were going on endlessly about weapons of mass destruction. Oh, what's it? I forget the name of the guy. Saddam Hussein. Saddam right. Hussein has got these weapons of mass destruction, chemicals, and also he's going to try to get nuclear and everything. And they were going on, oh, we've got to do this because he's going to cause all this death and killing and so forth. But, you know, it's kind of ironic. It's exactly like with Israel and Iran. You know, the Iranians are trying to create their first nuclear bomb. Meanwhile, Israel's got a whole stack of them. And, you know, the United States, Britain, France, Russia, China, everybody's got nuclear weapons. But when the Iranians want to build one, then that's the big thing that everybody says, oh, that's a crime, that's a crime. But meanwhile, what about the rest of them? What about Israel? Israel, how many nuclear weapons does Israel have? I think I've heard over 100. And, you know, they point at the other guy, but it's a case of the pot calling the kettle black. And with regard to Greater Israel, once I was onto the Jew issue with regard to the Holocaust, I then later heard of this Greater Israel plan. And I saw the maps and stuff, but I didn't dig into the origins of it, etc. And in fact, I could even be wrong that I've heard of the Greater Israel plan from Jews in the days when I was friendly to Jews. That could even have been when I first heard of the Greater Israel thing. And back then, because I was pro-Jew at the time, stupid and dumb and pro-Jew, I was like, oh, yeah, that's a cool plan. That's a cool plan. But that's as much as I know. I've seen the map, but I don't know the details behind it. Don't know the origins of it or so.
Right. Well, you know, another aspect you just brought up that's totally fake and gay, and like I always say, the litmus test for any master-slave system is the double standard. And here you have Israel, who stole nuclear technology from the United States, stole nuclear materials from the United States. Bibi Netanyahu, also of Unit 269 fame, brags about, as a young man, how he took part in this Mossad operation to smuggle out of America these very sophisticated strobe triggers that are used in nuclear testing, et cetera, and nuclear weapons manufacturing, and that he stole these out of the United States so they could go to Israel and be reversed engineered. And he brags about this, right? So he's stealing from his greatest ally, you know, to strengthen Israel and weaken the United States. And the outrageous part of this is Israel has never signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. They refuse to acknowledge that they have any nuclear weapons, biological weapons, or chemical weapons. You know, what's under Dimona stays under Dimona. We don't care what, you know, Vanuhu said, right? And so you have this culture that just says your laws don't apply to us. We'll do whatever we want. But yet America's own laws on foreign aid, known as the Glenn and the Symington Acts, these are passed by our federal government, our legislative branch, strictly prohibit U.S. giving any foreign aid to any nuclear armed country that has not signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and is open to inspections. But yet Israel continues to get billions of dollars all the time from the American taxpayer in a complete violation of this very clear law, right? And so, yeah, and so this is the, you know, level of subservience we're dealing with here. But, you know, the Greater Israel agenda, when I started looking into this, first I saw, okay, I see that they have the strategic thing that they want to be the new power, this new superpower in the Middle East. Now that the Soviet Union has collapsed and there's a power vacuum, they want to go in and balkanize all the Arab state, get them fighting each other. Meanwhile, they want to build up Greater Israel and be the dominant power in the region and become a global superpower. And this became known as the Odin Yenin plan. But that's from 1985. So I started looking at that. And then 1987 or 86, Benjamin Netanyahu wrote the book Terrorism, How the West Can Win. Then 1996, Richard Perle wrote the paper A Clean Break, A New Strategy for Securing the Realm, which basically says this is how we're going to implement the Odin-Yenin plan. And then he went on to form with William Crystal, Echo, 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 and Robert Kagan, Echo, Echo, this group called Project for the New American Century, or PNAC. And it's basically a bunch of Frankfurt School, Columbia University, next generation global communists, Trotskyites, you know, hardcore Marxists who basically cut their hair, took a shower, put on a suit, and became conservatives and took over the Republican Party in the United States under this idea of neoconservatism under George Bush, right? And this was a complete Zionist operation. And in 2000, they wrote a paper called Rebuilding America's Defenses, which basically is going to launch the Odin-Yenin plan by this thing called a new Pearl Harbor. You know, 1 year later, exactly, September 11th happened, and everything just rolled out like it was supposed to, totally fake and gay. But it had nothing to do to benefit anybody in the United States, and it had nothing to do with punishing those people who really did 9/11.
That's very interesting. You know, the one thing that I thought about once I realized that the Jews are liars, and I looked at this Iraq war, I thought to myself, isn't it strange that we've had 9/11 and America is racing around in the Middle East, killing Arabs and Muslims left, right, and center. And there in the middle of all of this are sitting the Jews in Israel. And they're quite fine. Everything's nice and peaceful there by them. But America's busy killing everybody around them. You know, that struck me as weird. And of course, now we understand, you know, that the white American, mostly white Americans, ended up going and dying for Israel.
Exactly. And, you know, this was, we got tricked into a war with the false flag operation. And then, you know, once I started seeing this, it's like, okay, let's look at the history here. And, you know, you just go back and look at how Israel's founding fathers were not people like Thomas Jefferson, were not people like James Madison, were not people like Benjamin Franklin, you know, were not people like John Adams. These the founding fathers of Israel were people like Illuminati, Rothschild family, Sabbatean Frankists, right? People like Meyer Lansky and Murder Incorporated, people like the Purple Gang, people like the Stern Gang, people like the Ergen, those were these Marxist terrorist anarchists that, you know, said we are going to just take over with absolute power, gangland power, and there's nothing you can do about it. And yeah, that is that intransigent mindset of this Talmudic culture is, you know, they are the bosses and those are the crime bosses that founded Israel. And suddenly they're a legitimate state. And instead of it being Murder Incorporated, they now call it the Mossad, you know. And so you have all of these, you know, basically people who lie, cheat, steal, kill, you know, terrorized for a living are now, you know, the honor guard of things like Unit 8200, Unit 269, Talpiot, Mega, etc. So that's the thing when you started, you know, looking into Israel and the creation of Israel and then seeing what was Operation Susanna and the Levon affair. Well, it was Jews dressing up like Arabs to terrorize Americans and British so they would leave Palestine so the Jews could take it over and it become Israel. Oh, what was the King David hotel bombing? Oh, that was when Jews dressed up like Arabs and blew up this hotel where British and Americans were staying to get the British out of Palestine so that the Jews could have Israel, you know. And so you see this operation of false flag throughout their history. Mossad's, unofficial motto is, by way of deception, you shall make war. And then we see, the USS Liberty attack. And, that they were trying to blame it on Egypt to get the U.S. into the war. So it would be basically Amalek America versus Amalek Russia. They're going to destroy the world, leaving greater Israel to rule the world. I mean, this is how these guys are thinking. And they keep trying to get a fight going between various enemies of theirs. And so it's this idea of the false flag. So, of course, you had Jews dressed up like Arabs to instigate this war. This is their modus operandi. We've established their motive. This is their modus operandi. They've got the opportunity and they've got, the means. So when did you start really doing a deep dive onto the different parts of Mossad and, these various units and the IDF and just, how corrupt it was? When did you start doing that?
I didn't dive deeply into that aspect of the Israelis. But what I do understand, and I did realize this, is that basically Jews invented modern terrorism. That's the bottom line. They went and massacred people. They planted bombs, etc. One thing that I did find out some info on that might be of interest to you is you mentioned the USS Liberty. I was actually reading a book on the history of the NSA, and unfortunately, due to other things, I never got around to finishing it. It was very fascinating. But the history of the NSA, I was absolutely amazed at what your people were doing back in the 1960s already. The NSA was already spying on the world, literally, long ago. And you Americans having these ships, these spy ships, but spy ships, spy planes, etc. And a very interesting thing I discovered about the USS Liberty is it was a spy ship. But the interesting thing was that this spy ship was just off the coast of Israel at the time of this Six-Day War. And at the time that it was there, it was actually very close and listening in on a place where the Israeli army had captured some Egyptian troops. And the Israelis were busy massacring the troops. They were killing them in cold blood. They were killing about 1,000 of them in a day in cold blood. And the USS Liberty was actually listening in on everything to do with that. At the same time, an NSA aircraft was also flying over the area and also recording everything that was going on there. And it seems that the reason these Israelis attacked the USS Liberty was they realized that their genocide that they're busy with, their massacres that they're busy with in cold blood, breaking the rules of war, that the USS Liberty is busy catching this. And so that is what made them decide to go and try and kill everybody on the USS Liberty and to sink it. And so in a sense, it's a bit of, by the way, it also shows a bit of their incompetence that they decide to attack this literally unarmed American ship, and they come with their air force and they come with their ships and torpedoes, and they shoot the crap out of it, and they still can't get it to sink. And despite killing a whole bunch of Americans, the Americans actually managed to survive in the face of the impossible. But my understanding is that the USS Liberty was onto this nasty killing that these Israelis were up to, and they were basically trying to hide their genocide That's why they tried to kill all the Americans and sink the USS Liberty. Don't know if you've heard that before.
Oh, I have heard that. And it's like, yes, that makes sense that, you know, they, because the Six-Day War, I mean, that was a religious holy war, you know, and all of those, you know, Middle East Israel wars, you know, those are holy wars. And they are, you know, just read their documents. I mean, they are out there doing mitzvah. They don't, yeah, you know, they are supposed to be depopulating the area, right? You know, so they just don't want to be exposed because that's breaking the law of making Jews look bad before the Gentiles. You know, and this gets into, you know, Talmudic Masorah law, you know, whistleblowing law, that you can't expose the, you know, the crimes of the Jews before the Gentiles. The other thing is, you know, dead men tell no tales, that they threw everything that they threw at the U.S. Liberty. And not only could they not sink it, but they could not stop it from communicating. That they managed to rig up an antenna line through literal hell. I mean, it was like the people doing this had to go through the napalm burning deck to hook that antenna back up. So that they could get a message out. And that was what made the Israelis break off the attack, because the USS Liberty sailors were able to get a signal out. And so, you know, you just see that, you know, you're dealing with an adversary who not only, you know, doesn't mind killing, but that is just, you know, that's part of their MO. So, you know, to me, when you start going back and look, doing a deep dive of this whole Zabatean Frankist Illuminati philosophy that, you know, Israel is based upon, you know, look at the flag. That is, you know, the two blue lines. That's the, you know, the two great rivers, the Nile and the Euphrates of Greater Israel, and Jews ruling. They're the whites on both sides. You know, within Greater Israel and without Greater Israel. That's one of the esoteric parts of that symbolism there. And then, you know, that is not a menorah in the center of that flag. That is a hexagram. Yeah, that is a symbol of black magic. Yeah, that they are hexing the world. That is this claim of rulership, the alpha level, you know, and that, you know, everybody else's cattle compared to them, and they're going to be treated as such under Talmudic Noahide law. And so it's really interesting when you look at the original flag that they came up with in 1897 during the World Zionist Congress, because it had both the blue lines, but the star, instead of being a blue hex, was a gold hex. And then you had the seven hidden stars, the golden stars around it, and the beast of Zion, that lion beast of the, you know, age of Leo. We're going into the age of Aquarius slash Leo. And so that symbol of the lion is that's the Rothschild family crest lion, you know, that beast of Zion. And then the two rivers, that's the Aquarian sign of the two squiggly lines. You know, so they're basically claiming to be dominant for the new age. You know, this is their whole thing, and they're going to make the world so miserable that the Messiah has to come. And this is the model they're working from. And so you're seeing these groups like the Mossad and Unit 1800 and Unit 269 and Talpiot and Mega, et cetera, and you realize this is not just greed. This is not just racism, Jewish supremacism. You know, these people are on this holy war, and they're united in this great work. That's what they call it, you know, the great work. And unfortunately, part of the end game of their great work is Western civilization being destroyed and all white people being exterminated. Amalek is an abomination to their Noahide law. So when did you start, you know, really looking into things like the Kabbalah and the Zabataeans and the Frankists and how that influenced the ruthlessness of the communist system?
You know, one thing I want to mention about these Jews and their behavior, because they are like these fake whites, is a friend of mine here in South Africa was a missile engineer. So he was very technical like you. And he was also a National Socialist and awakened to the issue of the Jews. And he said, he made an interesting remark to me, because, you know, we look at these quotes, white-looking people, and we can't understand their bizarre thinking and their weird ways, which just don't, which are unlike any behavior of any whites elsewhere, anywhere in Europe, anywhere in the world. And he said to me that these people are really Asiatics. And he said to me, we must look at these people. They have an Asiatic mind. And, you know, I think that that description has a lot of value for us, because it, you know, they are a world apart from us. They may have some kind of resemblance and some interbreeding with us, but their minds, I've said this before in some of my videos, the difference between us and them is like, suppose we were to meet Martians, you know, they could be as different. They might look like us, but what's inside their heads is completely and utterly alien. It would be no different to meeting Martians or aliens of some other kind. Their mindset is utterly, utterly different to all of us. Whereas everywhere I go, and all whites I've spoken to, and when I start digging into the history of different whites, like the Germans, for example, you know, when I was young, hearing, oh, all those terrible, evil Nazis. And then later, when you get to know Germans, and later when you get to study their history, you find out that they're exactly the same as you. That, you know, and same for me with Americans, you know. But the only group of, let's call it whites, in quotes, the only group of whites who are very weird and totally different are these Jews. Their mindset is very, very creepy, and deception, the dirtiest ways, is no problem for them. They don't have any of our moral code that we have. We've got certain moral codes and behavior that we regard as normal, but they break every one of those rules. There is nothing that's sacred. There's nothing that they won't break. You've got an I would call it an intimate enemy, an enemy that comes inside of your society, and that enemy will turn on you in the nastiest, lowest way, without even thinking about it twice, ever.
I'm always reminded of the Cicero quote. We'll pull that up real quick. Yeah, it's, a nation can survive its fools, even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known and carries his banner openly.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
And then he goes on to say that but the traitor moves amongst those within the gate freely, his sly whispers rustling through the alleys, heard in the very halls of government itself. For the traitor appears not a traitor. He speaks in accents familiar to his victims, and he wears their face and their arguments. He appeals to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly and unknown in the night to undermine the pillars of the city. He infects the body politic so it can no longer resist. A murderer is less to fear. The traitor is the plague. And Marcus Cicero wrote that in 100, and he was a senator from 106 to 43 BC. But yeah, even back then, I mean, he was naming the JQ. Yeah, this is the killers of empires, the slime mold that gets within successful systems and rots them from the inside. I mean, how many times do we have to see this play out in our history?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Jews, even in America, and let's say America, where you've got a big problem at the moment with them. I mean, half of the Jews in the world live in your country at the moment. Even in America, the Jews would not have made progress if they couldn't have had traitors, whites who are willing to betray other whites, or whites who are stupid enough to believe in them. And that's another thing about them that I've started thinking in recent times, is I think that the Jews even lie to their best and closest non-white allies. They lie to everybody. And I think even their closest allies don't realize that they're being played. That in order for their to be traitors working with them, these traitors are actually themselves often fooled, though there may be some of them that are demented enough to hate America, to hate Western civilization, to hate, you know, whites. And that a topic I don't touch much on, but it is an important topic, and for various reasons I leave it alone, but it is critical, is that gay issue that you are bringing up. The gay issue is very important. And I think it was Nixon who pointed out that the last few emperors of Rome were all gays. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that also plays into the whole thing. And when I watch what the Jews are gathering together in a country, it's like they are finding the degenerates of a country, and they bring them in as this alliance. They find anybody who's unhappy, and they bring them in to create this alliance of these misfits, and they use these misfits to destroy you. And you know, this war on whites is very real. And notice also in the war on whites how they have even turned the white male and female against each other. But the top of the list of the people that have to be destroyed are the white males. Everything, they even try and succeed to some degree to turn the white women against the white men. That's an important thing.
Yes. And you know, you hit upon the nail on the head, as we say, with why would non-Jews go along with this? And I always go back to carrot and stick. Some people, like you say, hate America. They have fallen for the Marxist BS, etc. They've got white guilt. They've got a martyr complex, whatever, you know, guilt-ridden, you know, yuppies from the 80s. You know, boomer generation with their pathological altruism being led by the nose, that, you know, oh, you're being a good goy, you virtue signaling, here, have an award or something. Then you have the people that are, you know, blackmailed. Then this is, you know, one of the big operations of Unit 269 and Jeffrey Epstein and Ehud Barak and Ghislaine Maxwell, the whole Pizzagate thing is, you know, to have all of these political leaders that, you know, you're supporting, you know, the hidden hand is supporting, because they know they can destroy them in a heartbeat, because the Mossad has a file on them. And so I always talk about the 5 B's of the Meany method, you know, that the Jews use against us, and it's bully, bribe, blackmail, banish, and bury. You know, they keep escalating till they get their way, even if they have to kill you. You know, kill you and your family. But
yes.
Go ahead.
My apologies. Interesting that you mentioned Epstein, because Epstein is fascinating, and that whole blackmail thing is interesting. There was a Jew in Australia. I actually did a video about him. I forget his name, but he was like the guy who brought crime, organized crime to Australia. And he also was big into blackmail, prostitution, using every method to control people. And then there's the other one that people forget about, and that is Lord Jana in Britain. Lord Jana, the supposed conservative in Parliament. Meanwhile, he's butt fucking something like 20 young boys.
This is the family show. Dinner theater. Sorry.
My apologies on that one. Meanwhile, he's having gay sex with boys in the Houses of Parliament. You know something, Frederick. The more I look at where the Western world has gone in the last 75 years, the more convinced I am that the entire direction of Western civilization, the entire direction has been stage managed against whites, that there are no whites in the Western world, anywhere in the Western world, who would have gone for liberalism, would have gone for any of these weird anti-white things at all. It can only have been happening as a result of massive, massive manipulation of whites. It's got to be on a grand scale. I don't think any whites, because I've looked at all kinds of weird things that have happened, bad things that have happened to white nations, whether it's Portugal when they lost their empire, whether it's Belgium when they lost the Congo, you know, whether it's the French or whatever. In every instance, whites always resisted the very thing that came, and they were willing to resist it with weapons and to go out and fight and wage a war. And yet in the end, they always lost. There was always a set of strange events that ultimately resulted in whites losing. Whether it's the whites of South Africa, whether it's the Germans, the Italians, the Spanish, the Portuguese, doesn't matter. Even the British. There's something bigger that's behind it. And I think that when you talk about things like Jeffrey Epstein, that Epstein, Jana, all these different weird, creepy Jews with their criminal activities and blackmail, that's got to be happening on a big scale. And in America itself, it must be a combination of corruption, money, and blackmail. And another thing I noticed is that your military people in America, you are getting generals and high-ranking officers. And the moment they retire, they all, quotes, go and some of them become millionaires in business. And I'm thinking that also, that's where there's also corruption there. There's got to be something in there. You know, why we are too tied to money, and consider how many American military people would have gone against certain things, maybe even rebelled or considered maybe a coup or something like that. Not that that's likely, but look at how they are quietly led by the nose away with money and stuff like that. I think the whole manipulation of people, that lies at the heart of these filthy scum, and that everything that whites are doing is anti-natural. But you've got this intimate enemy that's been among us for many centuries. Greek, and that enemy knows how to play our people inside out, and that is the reason why we're going down the wrong path.
And that brings us to in the few minutes we have left, the point nine, the third rail of the weaponization of the holohoax and how that has been used to basically stifle criticism of Jews and Israel and to target individuals that are building up too much of a following and people are listening to them. So you were talking in the first hour about that you were researching the Holocaust before you were researching 9/11 truth. I was just the opposite, where, you know, I was out doing the troll warrior in the chat rooms in the early day of social media, where you're still in the chat rooms. You didn't have Twitter yet. You didn't have Facebook yet. And, you know, what these Hasbro trolls would do is try to, you know, get you into a fight to, you know, lose your temper or say something, you know, that could be used to then go to the board administrator and have you removed from the site. And now, you know, and that's how I got thrown off of CNN. I wasn't violating any of their community standards, but, you know, they just didn't like the data dots I was putting there. You know, this was the thing, is you can't tell the truth if you keep having the media knocking you down. And then you had the Hasbro train trolls after 2006 coming after us. That's why we had the great troll wars after 9/11. And, you know, one of the big things was, you know, you 9/11 truthers are worse than Holocaust deniers. Right. Especially those who say Israel had any role in this. You know, you are putting Jews around the world at risk with this line of thought, and we find it grossly offensive. And so now we're seeing that Jews around the world are setting up these NGOs modeled after the American ADL and SPLC, notably things like the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, the CAA in the UK, that they're using to go after people like Mr. Graham Hart, Ms. Allison Chablot, Sven Longshanks, et cetera. So what's your take on, you know, how they're using that against us, and what can we do to combat that? And we've only got a couple of minutes, maybe. So quick answer.
Okay. The holohoax. The holohoax is such a critical lie for these people. The importance of the holohoax can't be emphasized enough. When you believe that lie allows them to get a level of sympathy that they haven't had in a long time. And it allows them to get away with so many things. And as with all things, the only answer to all these things is to find the truth and spread the truth. And it looks to me like this has to be a cultural thing that we do among ourselves. And I'm very delighted to see lots and lots of young people also diving in and doing things and finding history, saving books and spreading the truth. That's the only way that you can counter these people at all. Ultimately, this is a war of the truth versus the lie. And the truth works for us at every level. Our whole existence is based on reality and logic. So the truth is the only weapon, really. But the spreading of it.
This kind of thing for Act 2 of 9/11 and Station Day, hey, we're not even done with this.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.
These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.